Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's Friday. We made it to Friday. And more importantly, we made it through that 3 hours torture called the Democratic debate. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. This is the Daily Daily Caller podcast for Friday the 13th, which I believe, if I remember the stuff I read correctly, is also a full moon. So if you're into that sort of stuff, I don't know what it means, but you've got yourself a hobby there, and congratulations on that. As always, you can email the show, Derek@dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, whatever you got. I'm open to all of it, and I will be giving away the 2 copies of Sean Parnell's book, All Out War, right before we get to the Michelle Malkin interview, and that's really the big deal, is that the... About 22 minutes into this, we get to the Michelle Malkin interview, and I don't fool myself into thinking that you're here for anything but that. So you just got to wait for 21 minutes now-ish at this time, or skip ahead. Either way. All right. We do have debate coverage to get to, though, and holy geez. Oh, yes, and thank you for spreading the word, telling a friend, rating and reviewing on iTunes, sharing on social media, all those things that you guys do that causes this show to be fungus-like and grow, sometimes in places it shouldn't, but I don't care. Like I said, we've got a lot of audio to get to and a short amount of time to get to it, but before we get to it, I got to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Ancient Life Oil, and their CBD oil. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. Some of these Democrats on that stage could have used some CBD oil. That's why I use CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. It's a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. It has helped with the stress in my eyes, the sort of low-grade headache that I had there after a few hours of staring at a computer screen is gone. It's my knees are even feeling a little bit better. And that's pretty amazing because I have horrible knees from a lot of hockey as a kid and just genetics. I was a skeptic going in, but now I see it's why it's so popular. I feel great. Ancient Life Oil is non-psychoactive. You're not going to get high off of it. It gives you all the benefits without the high. I encourage you to do your own research. Go to your favorite search engine, type in CBD oil benefits, and check it out. You'll find out. You'll see. You'll understand why thousands of people have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. If you're ready to live your best life, go to ancientlifeoil.com now, the trusted source for the highest quality CBD oil, A-N-C-I-E-N-T, lifeoil.com, all one word, and at checkout, enter the promo code Derek, my name, named after Derek Sanderson, a professional hockey player, and you get free shipping. You can't beat it. I have the chocolate mint flavor, delish, and it works great. AncientLifeOil.com, promo code Derek. Okay, did you watch that thing? I thought that the 7 hours of CNN talking about climate change was bad, but I watched that 3 hours on ABC, the Democratic presidential debate last night, and I don't know what country these people want to represent. I don't even know what planet they live on, but it sounds awful. It is a horrible, racist place where you are stuck where you're born and oppressed from the moment you leave the womb. If you weren't fortunate enough to be sucked out by a Hoover and chopped up, because choice is all that matters. I mean, not in anything else. Abortion, Democrats support choice in abortion. Healthcare, not so much. Education, not at all. Taxes, forget it. Nothing. No other area in life do Democrats support choice, except in abortion, where they kind of seem like they want to mandate it. But if only to spare future children from the horrors of having to live in the United States of America. It really was. I was shocked by the debate a little bit. I was mostly shocked by how shocked I was by it. They had four clowns up there asking questions. George Stephanopoulos, who is the face of ABC News, he's on 6 days a week for reasons no focus group understands. Good God, like, really? That 6 days a week? Somebody said we need more George Stephanopoulos? I don't even think his wife thinks we need more George Stephanopoulos. And he's like 5'4". So you would think she would say, at least give me another 2 inches. That's not a sex joke. It's not a sex joke. Kind of is a sex joke. And then you had David Muir at the other end, Mr. Skinny Suit himself. He is the anchor of ABC Nightly News. Not a single strand of hair was out of place from David Muir. And other than that, I don't remember David Muir being a factor in the whole thing. I honestly, sitting back thinking about it now, I don't remember a damn thing about David Muir. I don't remember. Maybe he asked some interesting questions, but a non-entity. And then they had two minorities up there, a reporter, a black woman, and Jorge Ramos, who is anchor on Univision. He talks, he sounds like the armoire guy from Seinfeld. In case you don't know what that means, you should watch the episode, but here's just a little bit of a refresher.
Look at this.
It's an antique.
It's all handmade, and I love the inlay.
Yes, me too. It's gorgeous, completely. Pick it up. No, pick it up from the bottom over there.
Wait, what are you doing here, huh?
What does it look like we're doing? We're taking this.
You can't take this. This belongs to a friend of mine.
Look, you want to get hurt?
Huh?
I don't think you want to get hurt, because if you want to get hurt, I can hurt you. I just back up. Just pick it up.
What is this, huh?
You have some kind of product here? What is it you're not understanding? We're taking the armor, and that's all there is to it, okay?
Tell me Jorge Ramos doesn't sound like that guy. He is also, that guy is just as much of a journalist as Jorge Ramos is. Jorge's just terrible. I find it very interesting in the way that ABC News had this debate set up. They had Jorge Ramos from Univision. He asked all questions about Latinx people. And they had Lindsay Davis, a black female reporter. She asked all the questions about race. It was so ridiculous. I watched them, like, they segregate their questions now. And then you had David Muir and Snuffleupagus asking general policy questions. It was, it shouldn't surprise me. Actually, they set the tone right at the beginning. Here's Jorge Ramos in the opening.
Our national correspondent, Lindsay Davis, and Jorge Ramos from our partner network, Univision. Jorge?
George, thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to welcome Latinos across the country and to ask about Latinx issues during these challenging times. En este país también se habla español. Este debate se realiza en un momento muy difícil para los latinos en Texas y en todo Estados Unidos, pero es importante que ellos sepan, que sepamos que este también es nuestro país. Let me just give you a little translation here. I'm telling Latinos that despite the fact that we are facing difficult times, this is our country too.
We are delighted.
This is our country too, and we're taking the armoire. God, he's such a racist piece of crap that it's a disgrace that they allow him on the stage. But this is the modern left. This is where they are. You can't be a racist unless you're white. Everybody else, go ahead, hate on everything. The Latinx questions. We asked the will this fit in a Latinx apartment, this armoire? I don't think so. You make a racist armoire. And tell me, when he starts speaking Spanish, the crowd starts cheering. When you're abroad as an American, say you're in France, and you're not going to hear English all that much, you're at some event, and suddenly somebody's in the middle of speaking French then starts speaking English, do you feel compelled to start applauding? Do you just stand up and cheer, "Woohoo, I understand this! This is my language!" I don't think you do. So how is him cheering this, the crowd, that's why it's so weird that the crowd starts cheering when they hear Spanish. They did it in the first debate, too, when a couple of the candidates started speaking Spanish. Like, oh, they're bilingual. Oh, wow. That's so amazing. Oh, my God. They're just like most of the rest of the world, large swaths of the world. That's so heroic. But Jorge only asked questions about Hispanics, and that was just the way they had it set up. It was that sort of night. It's that sort of party. And Lindsay Davis asked about race. And then you get to the question where Lindsay Davis was asking about how you're going to be, you as white people. Let me address the white people in the room. What makes you think that you can heal the racial divide? Her question was, Donald Trump is torn apart the country based on race lines. Meanwhile, they've segregated the whole setup for this debate. How are you, Beto, the person best to bring this country together? And this is what I was talking about in the opening. Listen to the world Beto O'Rourke describes here in response to that question. Tell me if you recognize it, because it seems to be where all liberals live. Not anybody else, nobody else. Maybe they're just more woke and more in tune and hyper-diaper sensitive to everything that's going on in the world, and they just see microaggression upon microaggression strewn about like seashells on a beach. Mostly, I think it's just that they're crazy and evil and using identity politics to replace a lack of any ideas that people like or that will work, but that's just me. But anyway, listen to Beto describe what is supposed to be this country.
Trump has made that divide worse. Congressman O'Rourke, coming to you first, why are you the most qualified candidate to address this divide?
You know, I called this out in no uncertain terms on August 3rd and every day since then. And I was talking about it long before then as well. Racism in America is endemic. It is foundational. We can mark the creation of this country not at the 4th of July, 1776, but August 20th, 1619, when the first kidnapped African was brought to this country against his will and in bondage and as a slave, built the greatness and the success and the wealth that neither he nor his descendants would ever be able to fully participate in and enjoy. We have to be able to answer this challenge, and it is found in our education system, where in Texas, a five-year-old child in kindergarten is five times as likely to be disciplined or suspended or expelled based on the color of their skin. In our healthcare system, where there is a maternal mortality crisis three times as deadly for women of color, or the fact that there's 10 times the wealth in white America than there is in black America. I'm going to follow Sheila Jackson Lee's lead and sign into law a reparations bill that will allow us to address this at its foundations. But we will also call out the fact that we have a white supremacist in the White House, and he poses a mortal threat to people of color all across this country.
Secretary Castle, 45 seconds.
Of course, you hear the audience of barking seals clapping wildly, getting herring thrown to them. Do you recognize that country? Beto hates you, Whitey. They all hate you, Whitey. You're the cause of everything wrong in this world. Meanwhile, George Stephanopoulos and David Muir are sitting there crashing their, what, eight-figure checks? Going, yes, Beto, you're onto something. Wow, you're so enlightened, Beto. Beto, your wife is a billionaire, right? You know, you're not missing any meals anytime soon. But his fantasy world, this country is horribly racist. And why in the hell do you want open borders? Why in the hell would you encourage anybody to come to this country? Come be oppressed. Battle the 1619 is very in fashion right now with the Democratic Party, because the New York Times has declared that to be the official birth of the United States of America. The first African slaves were brought to this country. Oh, it was horrible. They were kidnapped and they were sold by their fellow Africans, where slavery had existed for millennia, Beto. Sorry to break that to you. Whitey didn't create slavery. But no, it's all Whitey's fault, and this country is an unfair place. It's a great message to send to kids, don't you think? Don't try. What are you doing trying? You're never going to get ahead. The government will take care of you. Democrats will take care of you. We'll make your life wonderful, like Chicago and Baltimore. So yeah, that was kind of the tone of the debate from the start through the end. Everything is awful. Everything is awesome. One thing's kind of funny is in this debate, The Democrats kind of praised Barack Obama. I think they got a little pushback from some of their constituents, and mostly their donors. Those are the people they really care about, in saying that you guys went hard at Obama. We like Obama, so don't go hard at Obama. So now they're all kind of trying to say, well, I like Obama, too. Obama was good. And then they talk about how awful and unfair the healthcare system is. Well, Democrats own that. They really own it. So when you're bad-mouthing the healthcare system in this country, like every single one of them did, talking about how horrible it is, they're bad-mouthing Obamacare. They passed that. Democrats did. Not a single Republican voted for it. And here it is. Now what we were told at the time could not be changed because it settled law and it solved all of our problems has a lot of problems. Millions of Americans without health insurance and millions more who can't afford the health insurance that the government was so benevolent to provide to them that nobody notices that, though. Let's see, who to go to next? There's so much to get to in so little time. The big thing that everybody's talking about, I guess, was the confrontation between Julian Castro and Joe Biden, because he went after Joe Biden pretty hard, kind of implying that he's senile, he's losing his mind. Julian Castro, because he's not very bright, remember he was Housing and Urban Development Secretary under Barack Obama. Do you remember him at all? No. Before that, he was mayor of San Antonio, Texas, which is a ceremonial position for the most part. It has no real power. The city council controls everything there. But he has, he's Hispanic. He was one of the people considered to be Hillary Clinton's running mate in 2016 because she wanted to appeal to Hispanics. The problem was that back then, Julian Castro did not speak Spanish very well because he's an American, and he tried desperately. He scrambled to try and get conversational in Spanish. It didn't happen fast enough. So rather than go with a real Hispanic guy, Hillary Clinton chose Tim Kaine from Virginia, who could speak Spanish. He's as white as the day is long, but he could speak Spanish. And that's the priority. That's how sick and perverted the Democratic mind is, really. Anyway, here's Castro going after Biden. Now, keep in mind, as you hear this, the allegations that Joaquin Castro are making against Joe Biden are wrong. That's Castro's biggest problem. I told you he wasn't very bright. He accused the vice president of saying something he didn't say and pushing a policy that doesn't do what Julian Castro is saying it does. He's been called out left and right after this, but I just want you to hear it because it's not necessarily what Castro said that's the problem. It's that he said it three times, and he said it in a really dickish way. There's no better word for it. He's just a very dickish way to put it to somebody that even Democrats who don't like him, who aren't going to vote for him or maybe have a better first choice or different first choice, they all kind of like Joe Biden. Republicans who think Joe Biden is crazy all say uniformly, Joe Biden is a nice guy. He's just not very bright or whatever. So listen to Castro go after sniffy Uncle Joe.
Rolled, they wouldn't have to buy in. That's a big difference because Barack Obama's vision was not to leave 10 million people uncovered. He wanted every single person in this country covered. My plan would do that. Your plan would
not. They do not have to buy in. They do not have to buy in.
You just said that. You just said that 2 minutes ago. You just said 2 minutes ago that they would have to buy in. You said they would have to buy in.
Would not have to buy in. If she qualifies for Medicaid,
are you forgetting what you said 2 minutes ago?
Be in for it.
You said just 2 minutes ago? I mean, I can't believe that you said 2 minutes ago that they had to buy in, and now you're saying they don't have to buy. You're forgetting that.
I said anyone your grandmother who has no money.
We need a healthcare system.
You're automatically enrolled.
Automatically enrolls people regardless of whether they choose to opt in or not. If you lose your job, for instance, his healthcare plan would not automatically enroll you. You would have to opt in. My healthcare plan would. That's a big difference. I'm fulfilling the legacy of Barack Obama, and you're not.
I'll be surprised to him.
The only problem there for Julian Castro is Joe Biden was correct, and Julian Castro was the one who was misremembering what he'd heard 2 minutes ago. But that seemed to be the theme of the night from the also-rans. They were the ones nipping at the heels of Joe Biden. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders didn't really go after sniffy Uncle Joe. They kind of let him go. They did their own thing. They played it safe, which never really works out in life. How many times have you seen a football team blow a huge lead in the fourth quarter or the second half because they're just sitting back and they think, well, we're up by 21 points. What could possibly go wrong? Well, ask everybody. Ask whoever it was that the New England Patriots kicked the crap out of in the Super Bowl. Ask them how sitting back and protecting a lead works for you. Afterwards, there was a very telling moment. Cory Booker was on CNN, and the idea, the problem with Joe Biden came up. And Cory kind of made a crack about Joe Biden's age and then tried to walk it back by saying, no, he's always been stupid. I'm not even kidding.
Thinking about people in communities like mine, listening to record players. I don't remember the last time I saw a record player in my
community. They're back in, you know.
They're back in. The vinyl is hot right
it
now.
It is hot. I just want to let you know.
Maybe he's cooler than I am, but there are definitely moments where you listen to Joe Biden and you just wonder. But I don't know. Look.
Senator, are you saying he's just too old to be president?
No, I'm definitely not saying that because I've listened to Joe Biden over the years and often felt like there were times that he is going on or meandering in his speech. Look.
Hey, man, I'm not saying Joe Biden's too old to be president. I'm saying he's always been crazy. He's always been kind of stupid. He often finds himself rambling on without a point. It's not because of his age. It's because he's dumb. I guess that's a polite way to put it, I suppose. I mean, if you got to put it some way and you don't want it to bounce back on you the way it's bouncing back on you, Joaquin Castro, that's the way to do it. Not really, though. Booker will still catch hell for it. They're both floating in the low, low, low single digits. So what are you going to do? This is Democrats. That was the most enjoyable part, was the afterwards when they're sitting around talking about the debate, the talking heads. You notice I haven't really talked about Kamala Harris because her answers were canned. They were just star-kissed, man. It was totally canned tuna. So bad was Kamala Harris in her canned answers that David Axelrod, Barack Obama's brain, pointed it out on CNN.
But she hasn't had a consistent message. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that she solved that problem tonight. She had some good moments in this debate. She had one really bad moment, which was this yes, we can line to Joe Biden about guns. It was just an inappropriate time and the laugh was inappropriate. But she also had some very, very good moments, including, I think, the last answer she gave. But what is missing is that sort of coherent message that she drives throughout.
She has no coherent message, Kamala Harris, and she really doesn't. She's far too green to have considered this run for president. She's been in the Senate for about 28 minutes. She has no accomplishments under her belt, and she has to disavow everything that got her to the United States Senate, namely being a prosecutor and the attorney general in the state of California. Because Democrats now, in the last 2 years, have begun to hate law enforcement. So they hate law enforcement. You can't go in and say, I'll bring about law and order and lower crime, because they don't want anybody in prison. One thing that Joe Biden said that opens up a whole world of possibilities for careers for people if Joe Biden should become president was that no nonviolent person, nobody who's committed any nonviolent crime should be in prison at all.
Nobody should be in jail for a nonviolent crime. As when we were in the White House, we released 36,000 people from the federal prison system.
Is that really something you should be bragging about? Nobody in right there. Bernie Madoff's ears perked up. Paul Manafort somewhere in solitary confinement for tax evasion is going, wait a second, I can get out. If Biden becomes president, I think I'm going to become a bank robber. I'm not going to bring in a gun. I'm going to just bring in a note or a cell phone or anything. They're not supposed to put up any resistance and say, well, you know what? If I get away with it, great. I got a few grand in my pocket. If I don't get away with it, well, Joe Biden just gives me a nice slap on a wrist and a lollipop and sends me on my way. No one who doesn't, really, everybody, every nonviolent criminal should be released from prison. There are some really violent criminals in prison who pleaded down to nonviolent offenses to get the lowest sentence possible. And Joe Biden wants to let them all go. It's our own Mariana Boatlift or whatever the hell it was. Mariana. When the Cubans released a bunch of prisoners and sent them to the United States. Except we're doing it to ourselves. And if you vote for a Democrat, that's really what's going to happen. It was a different world last night. Not one that I would like to live in, quite frankly. And I don't think you would like to live in it either. Well, you know what? I'm going to go a little bit long because I want to play this one Bernie clip. Because afterwards, Bernie was being interviewed and he's promising, just like everybody else, the sun, the moon, and the stars. And that pesky question about how you're going to pay for it keeps coming up. And Bernie, for the longest time, is insisting that nobody's going to pay more for health insurance, for health care under Medicare for All. Everything's going to be great. It's all going to be free. Yes, we're going to raise your taxes, but it's all going to be offset by the premiums you no longer pay and so on and so forth. Well, I don't know if he slipped up or accidentally told the truth, which in Bernie's case, they're the same thing. He slips up and accidentally tells the truth. And he said this on CNN.
Vice President Biden pressed you and Senator Warren on how you would pay for Medicare for All.
Right. And the answer,
would the taxes go up on the middle class? What's the answer, yes or no?
The answer is that the average American will be paying substantially less for health care than he or she is. See, that's like a Republican talking about, are you going to raise taxes?
It's a fair question because the middle class would like to know.
But here's the other point. We're going to do away with all premiums. If you pay $1,000 a month, what do you call that? Is that a tax for the insurance companies? What would you call it? All right, I would call it a tax. That's gone. How much are you paying out of pocket? That's gone. How much are you paying for co-payments? Gone. How much are you paying for prescription drugs? Under Medicare for All, you won't pay more than $200 a year for all the prescription drugs you need. At the end of the day, of course, we're going to pay for it like every other major country out of the general tax base. Of course we will. Like we pay for military spending. It will be funded progressively. Upper income people will pay the bulk. I'm not going to tell you that average people will not pay more, but they will not be paying premiums, co-payments, out-of-pocket expenses.
The audio was bad there. It was actually ABC's online streaming service, not CNN. But he's basically saying, yeah, we're going to raise your taxes. We're going to raise the taxes on the middle class. We're going to jerk them up. But don't worry, you're going to be offset in other ways. Well, if your employer pays a lot of your health insurance premiums or all of your health insurance premiums, you're totally going to get screwed. And then when the bills come due for this monstrosity that he wants to inflict on everybody, and they're 10 times what he's saying they're going to be, you better believe your taxes are going up. But don't worry, in the long run, you're going to save more. Yeah, maybe if you're constantly battling chronic illness, you'll see less out-of-pocket expenses. It'll just be taken out of your check. If you're a relatively healthy person or a full healthy person, you're getting screwed. You're going to get screwed in the name of collectivism. But then again, don't you always get screwed in the name of collectivism? Isn't that the problem with amongst many of the problems of collectivism? All right, that is all the time we have today, unfortunately, to analyze the debate, because we've got the great Michelle Malkin interview coming up next. The winners of the Sean Parnell signed book, and at the end of the Michelle Malkin interview, you can learn how to, well, it's not a surprise, but you'll be given the chance to start entering to win Michelle Malkin signed books. But the winners of the Sean Parnell signed books are, drum roll, I don't have drums, David Germany and Catherine Reed. Congratulations, your names were drawn from a fishbowl, actually just spread out on a coffee table, and picked at random by me. David Germany, Catherine Reed, you'll be getting emails from me directly asking for your address, and then I will send them out to you. That is all the time we have for today for The Fresh Show. We've got the Michelle Malkin interview coming up right after this. Have a great weekend. We'll see you here on Monday. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller podcast for Friday, September 13th. Yes, we're Jason Voorhees today. It is a beautiful day. The weekend's about to start, and as we do every Friday, we bring somebody into our world. We take them out of theirs, and we pick their brains, and this week is no different. We have best-selling author, and author of the new book, Open Borders, Inc., Who is Funding America's Destruction? It's Michelle Malkin, everybody.
Hello.
How are you, Michelle?
I'm doing great. How are you, Derek?
I'm doing well. Thank you, first of all, publicly, for blurbing my book.
Oh, yeah.
I was just a weirdo on Twitter, and you said yes, and I appreciate that. Before we get into this, I want to get into a couple of other things with you, because you used to live in this area. Every once in a while, I would see you on the train coming from Penn State. I lived in downtown Baltimore. I'd see you on the train coming to Washington, D.C., and then you escaped in a hot air balloon to real America and are now living in Colorado. What is the difference you've discovered? Because you didn't change jobs, you didn't change careers, you haven't changed your attitude or your beliefs at all. But when you leave this area, what do you realize? What did you miss living in this bubble?
There's very little that I missed.
No. What did you miss as far as what the rest of the real world believes and the difference between inside and outside the Beltway?
Yeah. Well, it is a bubble. And moving to Colorado was a change of scenery, and the air is literally and figuratively much fresher. For me, mostly it was about putting the kids in an environment where they didn't feel like they were under siege because of their parents' political beliefs. Mm-hmm. That's primary. And I've told the story often of being at a DC area IHOP and having total strangers yelling at me about something I'd said on cable TV the night before while my kids are trying to enjoy their pancakes.
Right.
That's insane. And we've only seen that escalate over the last several years,
where with cabinet secretary, cabinet officials.
Yes, pretty much can't order Chinese takeout, can't go to their homes without wondering if somebody's going to be yelling through a megaphone at them in the middle of the night. I mean, it really is truly insane and unhinged now, in a way that we only saw glimmers of when we were here 11 years ago. I don't like the defining of life completely and solely in political and partisan terms. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about living in Colorado is that people work hard, but they know how to play hard too.
And the first question that upon meeting you isn't, so what do you do for a living?
That's right. What is your GS rank?
Yes.
Right? Like, you know, this is not normal behavior.
But has your punditry changed? Because now you deal with real people more often.
Yeah.
So you actually, instead of pontificating like the rest of us about what we think so-called flyover country actually believes in a daily basis, you are out there. You hear these people.
Yeah.
And what we have, you know, did John Bolton resign or was he fired? Was the obsession.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody between the coast cares.
That's pretty much right. And for me, it was more returning to my roots, because I started out my journalism career at two metro newspapers on the West Coast in Los Angeles and Seattle. And so I'd always sort of been grounded in local politics, local and state politics, which fuel my passion for a lot of my reporting, much more than being in the national D.C. scene. And early on, when I was a college journalist, I had the opportunity to come and listen to Robert Novak address young conservative journalists. And his admonishment was always to not get trapped in D.C. for too long. Of course, he cut his teeth at the Chicago Sun-Times. And so I followed in his footsteps working for Metro newspapers, and I've always had that mentality. So when I did my tour of duty in the Beltway for about a decade, I thought, okay, this has to end.
Right.
I got to go back somewhere outside of that.
And thank God you did, but you haven't lost the ferocity. Why? Because most people, they do their tour of duty, as you rightly call it, and then they kind of go, I need like a Silkwood shower. I need to be treated like I was exposed to radiation. I need to get out of here and maybe take 5 years where I run a craft store or something. The desire to do the work is still in you.
Yeah.
Just you took it someplace else.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I love what I do, and I believe it is a blessing and a privilege to be able to make a living doing this. I say that all the time, especially to campus audiences. I don't take it for granted. And, you know, the word privilege has become a pejorative, right? It's like a curse word now. You're supposed to apologize for it. And I've always said that, you know, the problem in America with privilege is that people just don't appreciate it. I mean, we are a nation of ingrates in that sense. And so I wake up with a feeling, especially on my mountaintop, of complete elan and verve. I don't believe I get to do this still. And especially under the age of Trump, you know, it's much funner to do it now than it has been for the last 15, 20 years.
Especially when you can retreat to a mountain fortress.
Yeah, I guess so.
Take the high ground. It's easier to defend.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Open Borders, Inc., because this was the issue in 2016. It is still the issue today. Before we get into the actually who's funding America's destruction, I want to ask you about the conservative movement. You're very familiar with the conservative movement. Where are they in this fight? They don't seem to be on board. Maybe this has to do with who's funding America's destruction. There is the Chamber of Compromise, as we called them when I worked up on the Hill. And then there are the lefties. People assume that the Chamber is conservative. It's not. They're perfectly willing to weaponize the government against their opponents. But the think tanks, without naming names, but I used to work at the Heritage Foundation, AEI is just down the street, and so on and so forth. They're not, to the extent that they are for securing our border, you would barely know it. They aren't out there. They aren't leading on this. They're supposed to be the tip of the spear in the conservative intelligentsia, yet they seem to be sitting this one out and have since George W. Bush came out in favor of amnesty. Why?
Yeah. Well, because primarily their dedication is to the self-preservation of their own organizations, not the United States of America. And the Special Interest Open Borders Inc. lobby on the right has turned out to be not only the worst enemy of President Trump when he's committed to the immigration enforcement agenda, but the worst enemy of grassroots conservatives who have forked over so much money unknowingly to people who are sabotaging the very principles that they pay lip service to. And there are a few good researchers at some of these think tanks. Some of them have actually been deplatformed by their own employers for speaking the truth about the impact of bloody open borders. That's a disgrace. And it's not a mistake that there's this very clear intersection in my book between the war on our borders and the war on free speech and the inability to communicate the facts and the money trail is not just something that the Silicon Valley overlords want to squelch. It's people right here in the Beltway. And there's that military term of fragging inside the tent. That's what's going on here. And you've got a lot of these Beltway Swamp GOP lobbyists who make money creating pipelines and expanding them for cheap labor to come into the country to do the service of agribusiness and big businesses across this country. So people need to be aware of that. And, you know, the very first fundamental small step people can take is to stop giving money to these organizations.
Let's talk about the money, because it's not just – I always found it weird when you got this conga line of 25,000 people coming up 2,000 miles with – they're fleeing economic hardship. There's no doubt about that. It's you know, but I would suggest maybe you fight and stay and fix your own country.
Yes.
But they're making it 2,000 miles, mostly on foot or on sides of trucks or whatever. You got to eat. You got to take a shower every once in a while. You've got to sleep. And nobody really wants to talk about how that is happening. They're going through poor villages in Mexico. The people there can't afford to share their things. It's not just the, you know, once they get here, every city is now setting aside massive amounts of money to pay for lawyers to make sure they never get deported. Talk about the money flow and how it influences the start of that conga line.
Yeah. I mean, the conga line starts in Central America, and it stretches all the way up the spine of Mexico, right up to our border, and then into it, where you've got Catholic churches, Lutheran churches, Unitarian churches that are brazenly defying our immigration laws against aiding, abetting, harboring, and sheltering.
I love how if a Republican gives a speech at a church, the left says, we should probably strip them of their tax-exempt status.
Yeah, that's right.
Yet you go to a service, I'm a Catholic, you go to a service on a Sunday, and you're lectured about how we need open borders and we need absolute amnesty for everybody. And I don't know what the difference is between this and a keynote address at the Democratic National Convention.
That's exactly right. And what you have across Mexico are basically bed and breakfasts. I joke that there should be, Yelp or TripAdvisor reviews for these shelters that offer everything from psychological and psychiatric care to food and transportation in some cases. And they're all manner of Catholics. It's the Jesuits, it's the Scalabrinians, every sect of Catholicism is involved there. And so, when you put a few bucks into the collection plate here, thinking that you're helping, your fellow Catholic American citizens, you're not. In essence, you are helping subsidize this global human trafficking network that is embraced and condoned and promoted by a pope who spends every single day attacking President Trump and American sovereignty.
And a lot of Catholic values, too, actually, by the way.
Yes, that too, right. And there's a little section, and of course, many of your informed listeners are very familiar with the alliance between Saul Alinsky and the Catholic bishops in Chicago. And it was that alliance that basically gave birth to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in the first place. And these are people who have worked for decades to undermine our commitment to the sanctity of life, for example. So these are not only pro-abortion ideologues, but they are also militantly open borders. And, that entire constellation in Chicago helped fuel the Catholic wing of the sanctuary movement. The sanctuary movement really began in the Southwest with Texans and evangelical Christians, but the Catholics have run with it and, put it on steroids, basically.
To play devil's advocate for just a second on behalf of the Catholic Church and most churches, I'd imagine, they couch it under this is humanitarian. We have to help these people. That's not really what's going on. What's really going on here?
What's really going on is they're helping themselves to that money in the collection plates to fill their pews. And the Catholic Conference of Bishops, underneath it, of course, is Catholic Charities and the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. And all of these groups are getting billions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies, not only to incorporate illegal aliens and then lobby for amnesty. They turn around and lobby the government. I mean, they're on the attack every single day, not just legislatively, but in the court systems as well, joining with the ACLU and Soros groups to sue and to obstruct enforcement of immigration law. And it's all because, it's one big racket and they're profiting off of it under the guise of scripture and compassion.
Right. Well, let's talk about what happens when they get to the border, because there's a different set of apparatus and different set of funding for that. You get to the border, it's like wet foot, dry foot, except it's for the whole country. All right, forget it. Go ahead. Yeah. It's the worst game of Red Rover ever, because they're just standing there and saying, all right, go ahead.
Yeah, Red Rover, it's over.
There is a different tracks once you get into this country. The people who are just generally open borders because they want to delegitimize or weaken, water down the influence of the United States of America. There are the political opportunists who want to import future voters. You name it, the businesses who want cheap labor. And then there are the money people like George Soros. Mm-hmm. I understand most of those things. I don't understand what's in it for George Soros. Mm-hmm. I know what he stands for, but what is in it for a billionaire Bond villain who just sits back and seems to like to screw things up?
Yeah, well, it's about control. And if you read his book, The Case for Global Governance, he lays it out fairly explicitly. The very concept of sovereignty, which is fundamental to, the existence of our country and every Western country, he says is a quote-unquote obstacle. It's an obstacle to his agenda of, you know, controlling the world through the United Nations and the European Union. And so you see the obstacle that we are posing, and thank goodness that President Trump has drawn the line on this very clearly. I think it's one of his greatest unsung accomplishments is reducing the refugee numbers into this country. I mean, why do we do it? You know, the Statue of Liberty's poem by Emma Lazarus is not the Constitution.
No, it's legally binding. I had a conversation with Jim Acosta. It's the unpassed amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the United Nations, through its, you know, many global compacts over the years, has tried to dramatically increase and dump, you know, thousands and thousands of these refugees who are largely now coming from Africa and Muslim countries. And especially on a week when we're commemorating the September 11th anniversary, there's this collective amnesia in the Beltway about the lesson that we should have learned, that all it takes is a teeny tiny minority of these people to wreak massive havoc.
And not much money. It doesn't take a whole lot of money or a whole lot of people to do it. And they did it. When you get to this country, people, the Democrats constantly tell you the system is rigged. Elizabeth Warren will tell you the system is rigged. Don't bother trying to get ahead. The system is rigged. You'll never make it, kid, which is a horrible lesson, by the way. yet somehow she's managed to make millions of dollars.
Yes, right.
Born on an Indian reservation or what? I forget what her bio is, but something like that. But once they get here, the system is rigged to keep them here. It's not just our liberal judges who say the law should apply, the Constitution should apply to people still in Mexico seeking asylum, which is insane in and of itself. It is municipalities saying, here's a bunch of money. We're going to get you a lawyer and fight tooth and nail, step over 50 homeless people to give you this check to pay for a lawyer to make sure you don't get deported. It is the media industry that is painting these people as saints, holier. They're better than us, by
yes.
the way, Michelle.
Yes,
they
of course
commit
they
fewer
are.
Crimes.
No, they're real Americans.
Let's talk
already.
About that for a second.
Yeah.
The idea that illegal aliens commit far fewer crimes than Americans do. The government under the Obama administration explicitly did not collect data on illegal alien crime because they were. Obviously, if the numbers are going to give you what you want,
yes,
you don't want those numbers.
Yes, that's correct.
But
no paper, no problems.
We're told this as if it were typed or carved into stone by a burning bush.
Yeah.
They're better than us.
Yeah. You know, there's one thing, the clear distinction between illegal alien crime and native-born or legal crime here. And that is that each and every one of these criminal acts by illegal aliens is 100% preventable.
Yes, there is that.
That small
aside from that.
Little fact. But the whitewashing in particular by the open borders media has been incredibly effective. I guess we have to tip our hats to them for, you know, their relentless campaign on behalf of the so-called undocumented Americans in spirit. And so I talk a little bit about that because some of the most effective advocates who are Soros subsidized, like Jose Antonio Vargas, mm-hmm. the Pulitzer Prize winning Washington Post illegal alien fraudster. This is somebody who has openly admitted, brazenly admitted that he stole people's identities, that he faked a driver's license, that he lied to all of his media employers. And essentially thumbs his nose every single day and now has infiltrated Hollywood and advises script writers.
And they every time he cashes a check, if somebody writes him a check, he's breaking the law, is he not?
Yes. Yes. But, you know, you can't just simply blame him. And I don't know if you remember this, but he pulled a stunt where he went down to the border and he was, you know, saying, hey, arrest me. And nobody would do it. So in the end, whose fault is that?
How much of this is self-inflicted?
A lot of it.
Is it because we don't pay attention or is it because we elected the wrong people?
Both. And on the first front, what I'll say is the reason why this book is almost 500 pages, I mean, just exhaustively.
There's a lot of footnotes
so,
in there as well.
Is people need to do their own homework. And I am annoyed when I see that, you know, among the Open Borders Inc. propagandists on the left, you look at the rank and file. They know the immigration laws better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people outside of the country are well aware. They can cite chapter and verse, you know, we've got Democrats purportedly who are going down across the border and coaching the people on their asylum claims. They know what they're doing. And, you know, people say we got to get off the sidelines and be on the front lines and fight back. Well, you can't do that if you don't know what you're talking about.
Why are conservatives so – is it the charge – you're a racist. You've been called a racist six ways from Sunday. Anybody who's a conservative is called racist constantly for 8 years if you disagreed with Barack Obama on anything.
Yeah.
You were a Klansman no matter what. But there are so many people who are either disinterested or could go either way on this one. This is – I don't think there's a more important issue in this country because you can't – as Milton Friedman said, you can't have a social safety net and open borders. Correct. You can have one or the other, but you can't have both. We're already steaming towards a cliff with tens of trillions of dollars in unfunded liabilities on our social safety net programs. Yeah. And so many people who could make a difference don't seem interested.
Yeah. I mean, I think fear is a substantial factor in this. And I also think that a lot of people have lived in their own bubble. It's not just the swamp bubble or the coastal bubbles. They feel that in their own lives, they only derive benefits from quote-unquote immigration. And then they've been fed from the time that they were in public schools, the whole Emma Lazarusian idea.
It's a fundraising poem, for God's sakes.
Right? That we can absorb every last willing worker in the world who wants to work for, a dollar an hour wage. You see that the most motivated Americans are people who have suffered the worst consequences. They're the ranchers on the border that I've visited. They're the ICE agents and Border Patrol agents that I've known on both the northern and southern borders for more than 25 plus years. And of course, the rising voice of these angel moms and dads, these families who have lost loved ones, who've made the ultimate sacrifice. And I have to say that, for all of the disagreements I may have had in the past with President Trump and certainly some disagreements now, I think that the singular most sort of, incredible act of character that he's shown is that he hasn't abandoned so many of these families that he campaigned for and elevated in a manner that the GOP establishment would never do. You know, I've known the Jamil Shaw family for upwards of 15 years now. And I remember in the aftermath of Romney's loss, there were these retreats where the establishment GOP licks its wounds.
The autopsy.
And then always blames us. Right. Always blames us. Well, we need to soften our message. We need to do more outreach. And I said, why don't you outreach to Jamil Shaw? I bombarded Reince Priebus with tweets. Here, meet Jamil Shaw. Wouldn't even give him the time of day, wouldn't even respond to him. And that just showed you everything that was wrong with the DC GOP.
Well, there's a lot wrong with the DC GOP.
And that's a whole other book, right?
But in the book, you go through, people don't realize, they see what's on TV. They know the major, the Democratic Party, the MoveOn.org, the people that are generally open borders, La Raza, things like that. Yeah. But they don't realize the actual web, the network around the country of organizations and towns across the country that are set up to shield people from responsibility of their actions, the illegal aliens, and the amount of money that is poured into that.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how deep this web goes.
Yeah. So Soros himself has an estimated net worth of $25 billion.
Is that all?
He uses it very effectively, doesn't he, though? Like every single dime. $18 billion of that he's earmarked to shove over to the Open Society Foundation. And so there is this proliferation of all of these so-called community groups that have these benign, anodyne names. For example, in New York City, there's a group called Make the Road Again. What does that even mean? Right? And where did they pop up? In the very early days of the Abolish ICE movement. And they were, doing sit-ins at airports to protest the Trump travel ban. Just came out of nowhere. And then there are similar groups like this in pretty much every metropolitan big city. And they're all coordinated. Because, you think to yourself, why is it that, like, on a dime, they can turn out 500, 1,000 people? Well, this has been one of my big pet peeves about the right. And you talked about, well, why don't people do something about it? And fear is one factor, but I think laziness is too. And also just a lack of any kind of central motivating factor. Why isn't there an anti-ICE movement on the right? We've got all these established groups out there. There's all these young people. They don't have any excuse, right? It's not like they're learning anything in college anyway. Get out there. And so a couple of weeks ago, I wrote this column about getting off the sidelines and starting a hashtag stand with ICE rally movement. And I always try to practice what I preach. This is not normally something I would like to do, but, you know, during the Tea Party years, I also felt like, you know what? If the left can have activist journalists, why can't the right? And so I was out there, you know, with our little homemade sign, the whole thing. And so we did a Stand with ICE rally in Aurora because it was many of these groups that I document that had laid siege to the Aurora, Colorado ICE facility and tore down the American flag and replaced it with the Mexican flag.
It's, yeah, that was disgusting. And not surprised. Are you surprised by the brazenness of these people? Because they have to know that there's a world outside their little drum circle. They have to know that. I imagine most of them, while they're cashing checks from their parents, recognize that their parents might not agree with them. And it seems more done to give the middle finger to people than it is to try and win anybody over. You don't pull down the U.S. flag and raise the Mexican flag and think, this is definitely going to help the cause and help expand the tent.
Yeah.
Why are they so brazen like that?
It is an intimidation campaign. And, you know, and of course, it's gotten increasingly violent. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have Occupy Portland, which turned into Occupy ICE in Portland, joining with Antifa, particularly the Rose City Antifa in Portland. And then you have groups of peaceful people who've been tarred and smeared as hate mongers. There's a group called Patriot Prayer. In large part, I believe that the Proud Boys have been unjustly persecuted and smeared. I've looked into a number of these cases and it's horrific. But they don't want any kind of resistance to the resistance forming. And the best way to do that is to undertake, you know, really just grossly vulgar actions like taking down the flag. I mean, normal people don't want to be around that kind of thing. They don't want to put their bodies on the line, and they certainly don't want to have their kids around that. But, you know, Antifa has no problem, like, dragging its kids and using them as kiddie human shields in front of them to do this kind of thing. I've been very familiar with the agitation in the Pacific Northwest for a long time because I worked in Seattle during the mid to late 1990s as that entire wing of anarchists, which has evolved into Antifa, was coalescing around, you know, the WTO riots. I mean, they burned down, you know, their idea of, you know, resistance was to smash windows at the Nike downtown store. Well, of course, we should be the ones doing it now.
Right, exactly. But, you know, it really is. They live in an insulated world. And you talk about Antifa. If you watch CNN, they're heroes. Mm-hmm. They're as Fredo Cuomo put it, it's anti-fascist. It's right there in the name, he said.
Yeah.
Yet they're the ones carrying billy clubs and beating up reporters like Andy Ngo.
Yes.
Who committed the sin of filming them in public.
Yes.
How can anybody, forget conservatives, but any American citizen interested in this issue, concerned about our sovereignty and open borders, get involved when you not only have the billions of George Soros flowing around bail money, organize these things, but they also will be, they run the risk of being doxxed by the leftists, by the media. It really is a David versus Goliath sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But first of all, knowledge is power. And I think digesting the entire book, I hope, is going to prompt people to act. And there's small steps people can take to try and withdraw their own money from private entities, from Hollywood, from some of these major corporations that are underwriting America's destruction. And then hopefully that knowledge will enlighten them when they, participate in their local and state elections. I mean, we need prosecutors who are not going to look the other way at immigration law. And, you know, in my former home county of Montgomery County, Maryland, we're seeing that now. So this week, there's going to be another rally. It'll be the second for me, where it's not only about supporting ICE, but it's about shedding light on ordinary American families that want to protect their own children. I mean, here we have the left that has been so successful in this whole, oh, we can't have separation of families, separation of families. But they have nothing to say about the separation of American children from American parents when those children are victims of illegal alien crime, whether it's these multiple serial rapists in Montgomery County, murders of MS-13 in just a month. Exactly.
What did we not know about? What did we not hear about for how long?
Those are only the ones we've heard of.
Back to George Soros for a second. One of the things George Soros did, Republicans get a lot of credit for 2010 targeting state legislatures so that they could redistrict in a favorable way. It's been going on, for decades, but it hasn't been as coordinated as it was in 2010. The left is outraged and trying to do it now. Under the radar is George Soros funding attorneys general and state's attorneys in cities across the country. And that is really where this is taking hold. Local is where the real problem is.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
I mean, the hijacking of these institutions that are supposed to protect and serve us, provide law and order.
Most people think, a DA is a DA. They're all going to enforce the laws. It doesn't really matter who's there, but it really matters.
That's right. And if you look at places like Chicago or Philadelphia with Larry Krasner, these people have a very clear social justice agenda, and they've been underwritten by Soros money. And what happens, too, is that the Open Society foundations will give money to some, you know, sort of primary group that we know about. And then that group will turn around and sprinkle that money to basically subcontractors. And this is the proliferation of those small neighborhood groups that have these mysterious names and you wonder where they come from. So it's like this nice little tree, you know, this trickle down effect of Soros money. And, you know, people really need to be looking at, you know, public disclosure commission records and campaign finance databases to be able to understand what's happening there. And then, of course, you've got mayors like Ted Wheeler in Portland, who also serves as the police commissioner at the same time. You know, in his case, he doesn't need to even have a single penny of Soros money to be carrying water for him.
And the people keep electing these people. That's what drives me nuts.
Yes.
So you have to wonder, do the people in Portland not care, or do they not know?
That's a good question. I can't answer it. That might be a better question for Andy.
Let me ask you, when you start out to write a book, you have an outline, you have an idea of what you're going to see. And in the course of doing the research, in the course of incorporating that research into your book, you more often than not learn something that you didn't know, or maybe you learn some. Your mind has changed. Was there something that you discovered that or changed your mind on in writing Open Borders Inc., where you're like, I didn't know that. It's worse than I thought. It's better than I thought. Whatever it is, what surprised you in the process?
Two things. It surprised me, and it was much worse than I thought when I actually drilled down and started documenting. You know, just on the ledger, how much money the Vatican and the Catholic Church are spending on these organizations, every aspect of it, of resettling refugees, of welcoming illegal aliens from the southern border and integrating them into communities, the outright partisan lobbying by the church. And then with regard to the refugee resettlement racket itself, I think, you know, most informed listeners of your show and of the Daily Caller are generally aware of the refugee resettlement racket, but of each one of those lucrative contracts that's been sent out, I couldn't believe that it really has totaled now into the billions of dollars that these contractors are making.
Now, you've scared the hell out of everybody and demoralized us. Give us some hope. Michelle, where do we go? Is it too late? Is this just, this is how it is, and here's the handbook for the end? Or what can we do? How do we pull up from this nosedive? There's the mountain. What do we do?
Well, one of the most encouraging things, and again, this was a surprise to me, was learning that there are pockets of resistance. I love this, like, sort of like reappropriating of the resistance word. And the credit goes to an incredible investigative blogger, Ann Corcoran, who runs a site called Refugee Resettlement Watch, that in fact, many of these communities, and they're not all are. These are independent, these are working class Democrats, I guess what you used to call Reagan Democrats, who've been pushing back against the racket since under the Obama administration, because we had an all-time high of 100,000 a year that he was bringing in. The Trump administration has reduced that to $30,000 refugees a year and may want to zero it, which I think we need a moratorium. But they are pushing back in court. They are resisting the, you know, deep state at the State Department on this, which helps run the program with the United Nations. And there was much more aware of it, of course, in the communities where, you know, they've had to deal with all the welfare, education, health costs, public safety costs. And in fact, there are even some Democratic mayors in New England, and particularly Lewiston, Maine, and some parts of northern New Jersey as well, that have been disproportionately affected. And, you know, there's even been some movement in the courts as well. So I think it's going to be at the grassroots organic level. And I think that people need to know what they're up against and understand that this is what President Trump is up against, too.
It's much easier to win a fight when you only have to fire at the people in the other trench. And sadly, in the right, there's a lot of firing down our own trench.
No question about it.
That's friendly fire is the biggest problem. Last question for you, Michelle, and thank you for coming in. When somebody turns the last page, and it's a substantial book, lots of footnotes, all the left, I'm sure Media Matters is assigned some sort of bridge troll to sit there and comb through every one of these endnotes and try and find holes in your research.
Yeah.
What do you want, as they close the back flap, what do you want the person to walk away with when they read Open Borders, Inc.?
I want them to know that how they feel about this country is how I feel about this country, that it is still worth saving. And I talked to a lot of people outside of the Beltway who've basically given up. I mean, they're hunkering down. I mean, they're the creme de la creme of preppers. I mean, they're just waiting and bracing for the end. And I don't think that we're there yet. I think that this is an inflection point, and it's much bigger than just reelecting Donald Trump. It's about taking your own communities back. You don't make America great again just by casting a vote in a presidential election cycle. And the success stories that are in here about those pockets of resistance need to be expanded. And I hope that people will embrace my mantra, which was the investigative mantra of the book, which is to follow the money, find the truth, and then act on it.
The book, Open Borders, Inc., Who's Funding America's Destruction, is out now. It's burning up Amazon. Go buy a copy. Michelle has offered to nicely sign a copy or two, or at least, and also one of her old books. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of Open Borders, Inc., or Who Built That, all you have to do is email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Let me know, hey, I want in there. Otherwise, you can tell me mean things if that's what you want. And if you have bought the book already, and you send me a screen capture of the receipt or a picture of you holding the book, not in a bookstore, no cheating, then you'll be entered twice. Michelle, good luck with the book. Not that you need it. It's already burning up. But thank you for this, and thank you for everything that you do. You're one of the brave people out there that isn't afraid or trying to sugarcoat and pretend that they're not really. You stand up for what you believe, and you're not afraid to say it. So thank you for that, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Derek. Right back at you.
That's all the time we have. We'll be back here on Monday. Thanks for watching, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. Have a great day.
Nobody should be in jail for a nonviolent crime.